If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So in the past year, 1,500 complaints have been received by the Gauteng Human Rights Commission. That's only the Gauteng Human Rights Commission, not the National Human Rights Commission. So that's quite worrying. On the line with us is the SA Human Rights Commissioner in Gauteng, Zamantu Mwambeki. Thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for having us.
It's a big concern. 1,500 complaints. Let's talk about these complaints. Some of these are quite familiar to us. We know the complaints around Hammanskraal in Tshwane, where we all saw the breakout of cholera. There are more. Let's talk about the rest that you've been receiving.
So we've been dealing with a number of complaints. And as we said in our briefing, that this just shows an average from about 1,300 to 1,500 on a year average that are brought to the housing office. Mm. And that doesn't account for the other provincial offices, including Western Cape and KZN, that also see a high number of complaints. But for Gauteng, this year we've had the complaints coming from the hate speech that is always quite prevalent in the province. We have also seen an increase in hate speech, particularly occurring amongst children in schools. Xenophobic, homophobic, as well as racist slurs are being uttered within the school environment. Mm-hmm. Service delivery complaints across the board in different municipalities, as well as complaints coming about the provision of services, as well as infrastructure challenges, both at an education and the health and within the health department. Mm.
You know, you point out a very important fact, because every time community members say this, the politicians always argue it's not true, that some of the service delivery problems are more prevalent in townships. In one municipality, it's not the entire municipality. The people that get the worst treatment are the people in the townships.
Indeed, but what we've seen, Pamela, is a communication issue. Mm-hmm. It's about how people access information. Mm. When we saw that there were maintenance and there wouldn't be water within the north of Johannesburg, it went as far as Kaya FM, SABC, and ANN just for maintenance. Mm. But when there's routine maintenance happening in Soshanguve, the communication strategy is just not as robust. But so if there is maintenance, which we all can understand, the communication and the strategy to get to the townships, to get to Shosha, to get to Tembisa, is just not the same. And for us, what we've seen is that when a community comes to us and say, oh, we are from Shosha, there's a water disconnection, we send that to the municipality. The municipality will come and say, no, it's maintenance. But how do the residents know? Mm. And we've said that what is the communication to the ward councillors? We know that in suburbs there are WhatsApp groups, and all of these community forums, and the ward councillors are able to distribute information. Mm. You've got access to Twitter. But the communication that has to happen in those areas is just not as, it doesn't reach the market that it needs to reach.
And maybe in general, what's the response by municipalities? Because they do also, you know, community members in these areas have access to radio stations, as you said, Twitter, WhatsApp groups themselves. Yeah. So what's the real issue here? Is it the ward councillors that are less inactive, or what's going on here?
I don't think one can pin it to just one issue. It is obviously a bigger community group, that's for one. Mm-hmm. And looking at the socioeconomic challenges of that community, you would assume maybe the children have got access to Twitter and social media and WhatsApp. But the ability of people to access radio, yes, people do access radio, but by the time I tune in, it might not be there. Mm-hmm. So we need a greater communication strategy across board of how do people access information. If I go, let's say, to my ward, to the municipality, before I protest, there should be something as simple as a notice board. The ward councillor should be able to say, how do I call a community meeting? How do I go through the community policing forums and all of the subgroups, SANCO, and all of the organizations within the community who do not want to keep the information, which is what sometimes happens, but are willing to distribute the information. And with the current challenges in the with the water challenges in the province, we will need a greater communication strategy about where are their water disconnections. What is it? Is it routine maintenance? Is it a pipe burst? Is it like we saw earlier on, maintenance and all of those? So communication puts residents at ease, and they're less likely to come to the commission if they know exactly. And then we usually reach out, and then the information comes to us, and then we are able to then distribute it to the people who are approaching the commission.
I want to focus a little bit on the Vaal, because I think it's a very interesting case study here. You have a community which, relatively compared to other municipalities, are good ratepayers when you compare them to other municipalities. And yet the kind of service delivery that they've been receiving is absolutely appalling. We all know about that sewage problems that they've been experiencing, the dam. It's quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they do seem to have quite an organized community structure too. The Vaal committees and all of that are very active. Yeah, and that are very active. And so how does one reconcile all that I've just said? You know, they are, when you relatively check them against other municipalities, they are good ratepayers. When you look at the electricity usage, they are paying Eskom. And they're a bit more organized, but they're not getting the benefits of an organized community would get. And they have, I'm told, also gone to COCTA to report their cases. What's going on there?
So, like just about everywhere else in the province, the issue of, there are a number of issues that face Gauteng. It's the migration into the province, but also the inability for the province to adequately plan for the number of people who are utilizing its services. Now, when you have that and a declining economy that cannot meet the demand from the people. If we look at what the census told us from last year, we're sitting at about 15 million people at an infrastructure that could not and cannot handle the amount of people who are utilizing its services. And though the people of Vaal, the infrastructure is not just limited to Vaal, it's connected to other municipalities. It doesn't have like a geographical border where it says, this is where it just stops. And that's why you need COCTA at a provincial level to say, all right, if Mfuleni says, I'm only providing services to here, who's taking over from here, mid-Vaal from here to here? We need that cooperative governance, because the people and the infrastructure is not set up in that way where you say, oh, my problems only start and end until this borderline of Mfuleni or Steadybank. That infrastructure, similar to Hammanskraal, is cross-cutting. And the other problem that you have is, though you are paying, the municipality and some municipalities are just inundated in debt. The amount of money that is currently coming in from the people who can pay, but the debt and the rates that it has to pay are just not equal. Mm. And the issue of Vaal is really an issue of this great lack of maintenance over a number of years, similar to Hammanskraal. We can talk about the outbreak that happened last year that saw the death of so many people, but we can't even pinpoint what the source of the outbreak is, because that infrastructure is just not isolated in Tshwane. And right now, 450 million rand is being allocated to that project. But what about the maintenance thereafter, when we have municipalities that are not stable, and these projects, perhaps by another municipality, will not be prioritized? And if you see in terms of the municipal planning, the maintenance budget, even in terms of the hospitals, is very, very low. So you'll have a commitment of 450 million for this project. And we also say the same thing in Rand West, where you're like, it's good, the project is good, but what happens when the project is handed over to the municipality? It's not about mismanagement. We need to have the money And it takes a lot of money to maintain as and when problems occur. And sometimes also, in addition, as we know, we just sometimes don't have the expertise in the country.
And to your point, when you look at, for instance, Hammanskraal, right, they were already given a separate provision, 450 million, to get this sort of this project off the ground. But it's not enough.
Yeah.
They need 9 billion. And that in itself is not easy to get that in one fiscus.
Definitely not in the current one. We have a lot of, I mean, if you look at the needs, there needs to be adequate planning for the NHI, with health infrastructure challenges, with educational infrastructure challenges. This small pie has to go further than where it needed to go. But somehow, because of the challenges, you have to take out a big chunk of the pie at different times to go to these disasters. So if you look at what happened with the floods in KZN, the money was supposed to go to somewhere. And it had to be taken from that somewhere to address the issues of the floods. I mean, nobody could have prepared for that. But I'm just saying that when we have these projects that happen when disasters happen, it just means that it just places greater emphasis on using the money that we have to maintain in preparation for disaster. And then when disaster happens, we are always not caught with our tail between our legs. But it has to come from somewhere. And that's why we find challenges in one sector having to equip for another sector. Currently, they're being said that there must be different payments for the, as I said, the floods, the unrest, all of those things. The money has to come from somewhere, and it has to come from that same fiscus. That now we are asking as the commission to take 9 billion, have Hammanskraal declared as a disaster, and go there after COVID and after everything else has happened.
And this is this sort of explaining what is happening with this the hospitals. You mentioned them a bit earlier on. Yes, you have these provincial hospitals that are inundated with patients coming from other provinces because they've got specialized treatment, right? But there are other issues like nurses. You know, you just don't have enough doctors and nurses on the ground. And what is the reason behind that? Is it that that budget keeps shrinking and you're not able to keep up with the demands of what the hospital needs are?
Definitely, and this is cross-cutting. If you really look and you do a deep dive, and this is what we were doing. We were doing a deep dive, not just looking from the patient side, as we would normally do in terms of how patients receive the service, but what is really going on in the administrative side. But if you've got, and this is just another issue that we highlighted, that we've got a society where there's a high number of drug usage. That means that when people go into drug-induced psychosis, they go into these hospitals. Now, when they go into the hospital, they must be put in a psychiatric ward. Psychiatry is a specialization. You can't just go and you say, oh, I'm just going to keep somebody here. Then you need specialized nurses who are trained in psychiatry. You need a psychiatrist who is equipped to give out dosage. And then that person, that psychiatrist, needs to determine whether the person must stay here or must be sent to Vesco, Pisa, Stack, from there. We need that supply chain to be continuous. And when there is a form, like there currently is right now with the lack of specialized nurses in trauma, in ICU, we will see mistakes. We will see nurses who are exhausted. We will see nurses who are very short in temper, because what we have seen from nurses telling us and is that they do many, many shifts. There's currently even talk in some hospitals of not paying doctors overtime as a means of retaining the funds. But if you're not having the doctors paying, being paid overtime, who's going to be there when that doctor has to clock out? Because there's nobody to take over that shift. So when you really look at it from the administrative side, it paints not a different lens, but it paints a lens of why sometimes we have those challenges from the patient's from the patient lens. If you remember what happened in Tembisa, where in December there was a patient was on the floor, you can't really put fault on anybody. He was in casualty. He needed to be put into the mental health care ward. The ward was full. He can't be in casualty. It's just what happens. And when you are left in a situation where you have to choose from Zama and Zanele in a situation, that is left to a person to make a decision and a call. And sometimes that is not compliance with legislation, and that definitely leads to right violations. Mm-hmm. So for us, this investigation, particularly for our province, mm-hmm. which is always inundated, whether from the education side or from the health side, with people coming to receive services here, we need to have a thorough analysis of really what is really happening. We can't just call it the economic hub. It comes with different consequences if it is the economic hub.
I really appreciate you breaking all of this down for us. Zamantu Mbeki is a South African Human Rights Commissioner in the province of Gauteng.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.